Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, the quiet man of the Trump administration, heads to East Asia today. He leaves headlines at home about an alias email he used to talk climate change as Exxon CEO, about why he barely speaks in public. But he's got bigger fish to fry right now in Asia. Barack Obama wanted to pivot there. Donald Trump says America first. Asia's listening. North Korea's testing nukes. This hour on Point, Rex Tillerson turns to Asia. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How do you see this administration dealing with North Korea's nuclear weapons with China's power? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Getting Rex Tillerson to comment on anything, just about anything, is a challenge. Here was a March 7th meeting at the State Department. NBC News chief, foreign affairs correspondent Andrea Mitchell, shouting questions over a photo op there, trying to get something out of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson.
Mr. Secretary, China has said there will be consequences for the deployment now of anti-missile defenses in South Korea. Can you respond to the threats from China? Mr. Minister, are you sure the Trump administration will be strong against Vladimir Putin?
Thank you, guys. We're leaving.
They haven't been in yet.
So. Thank you.
She got hustled out. No answers there. But there's plenty to respond to. South Korea just had a court say its president, it ended the president's term in office. A huge protest for months there. Here they were back in December. Six straight weeks of protests had gone on. South Koreans demanding that she leave office. Huge protests and now political turmoil in South Korea. And from the north, well, earlier this month, they launched four missiles into the Sea of Japan. Here's Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe telling reporters March 6th that North Korea has become a new kind of threat.
Japan lodged strong protest against North Korea. The ballistic missile fired this time shows clearly that North Korea has become a new kind of threat.
We want to look at Rex Tillerson's trip to Asia. Joining me first today from Washington is David Ignatius, foreign affairs columnist for The Washington Post. David, welcome back to On Point.
Hello, Tom.
Do nukes go to the top of the agenda by necessity? North Korean nukes?
I think that probably is the number one issue for Secretary Tillerson, both in his visits to Japan and to Beijing. The message to China is U.S. is running out of patience. North Korea continues to move toward the ability to deliver a nuclear weapon onto U.S. territory. That's unacceptable. The Chinese must take stronger action to restrain North Korea. And until that action is taken, the U.S. will continue with its efforts to defend itself and its allies, South Korea and Japan, including anti-missile defense.
The Chinese have been very upset about the planned deployment now of anti-missile defenses by the United States in South Korea. Why are they so upset about this so-called THAAD system, THAAD, Terminal High Altitude Area Defense?
They worry about it because in addition to protecting South Korea and Japan against a North Korean attack, it would also, because of its multi-phase ability, be effective against Chinese missile launches and in that sense would reduce the Chinese nuclear deterrent in their view and weaken their power. So they see this as having consequences for their security, even if, as we say, it's intended for North Korea.
I want to dig on into that nuclear front, but step back for a second here. President Obama tried to, and to some extent did, pivot to Asia, away from the Middle East, away from Europe in terms of the U.S. focus and energies.
What about this administration and how Asia perceives it? It's very young still. Donald Trump started right out with a call from the president of Taiwan, which got China's attention, called the One China policy into question, which got China's attention in a big way. The Japanese prime minister, among the earliest visitors to Donald Trump. How's the region looking at this presidency so far, David?
I think it's fair to say that Asia is scratching its head as it looks at Donald Trump, unsure just what the U.S. policy will be. There have been a number of steps that have had the effect, not intended, I'm sure, to increase China's leverage in the region. One was the Trump decision immediately to avoid the Trans-Pacific Partnership. China is all too eager to step into that void and be the leader of regional trade and economic arrangements. In addition, Donald Trump, during the transition, discombobulated the Chinese by suggesting that he wasn't committed to the One China policy. The Chinese reacted after an initial burst of anger, reacted fairly calmly and waited for Trump to amend his policy. The Chinese passed the message that until Trump clarified that he supported the One China policy, there would be no discussions between Xi Jinping, the president of China, and Donald Trump. And I reported a week ago that when that message was conveyed by Secretary Tillerson and Jared Kushner to President Trump, they won't talk to you unless you clarify the policy. Trump's response was, so clarify.
Get him on the phone.
That's the pragmatist in Donald Trump. So Trump has now put the U.S. in the same policy line we've been on since 1972, and that opens the door for a visit by Rex Tillerson to Beijing. The Chinese prime minister this week made very soothing noises toward the U.S. We're hoping for a good relationship, hoping for mutually beneficial economic relations. But this trip, I think, will be important because Tillerson's going to bring the message on the North Korea threat. You need to do more or we have a problem.
There's been a lot of talk about the fact that initially Rex Tillerson was going to take no press with him, breaking decades of tradition here, all the way back to Henry Kissinger flying into China on his secret assignments. Now he's taking one reporter from a digital news outlet founded by former Republican political operatives in 2012, the Independent Journal Review. This is not exactly the full posse. What is the significance for this trip of Rex Tillerson's very low profile, very quiet style of exercising his role as Secretary of State?
Well, he behaves as if he's still chief executive of ExxonMobil. Chief executive of a big corporation doesn't travel with the press. He'd find it bizarre if that was suggested. And Tillerson seems to think he can operate by the same rules. And I think the problem is that his ability to be an effective, impactful Secretary of State, to be seen by our friends, allies around the world, seen by our adversaries, seen by the various stakeholders in U.S. foreign policy in the United States, be seen as important, is diminished by this very low profile. I wrote last week that he was off to an agonizingly slow start as Secretary of State. And I think that's true. We can talk about some of the reasons, but certainly one of them is this deliberate attempt to have a very low media profile. He looked at Secretary of State John Kerry, who took the media with him everywhere, was in the news almost every day. He looked at other high-visibility secretaries of state like Colin Powell and decided, talking with his advisors, that that was a limiting factor for their ability to really be negotiators, operate with a lower profile and more effectiveness. So he's doing this not by accident but deliberately. I think the question is he overdoing it? Is he taking himself so much out of the picture that the country and the world are beginning to ignore him?
He's on a big trip now. David Ignatius, please stand by there in Washington. David Kong joins us right now from Los Angeles. He's director of the USC Korean Studies Institute. David Kong, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Now, the first thing I have to ask you about the BBC internet sensation this week is, do you have any of your children in the room with you there?
No.
An 8-year-old daughter sashaying
in. The studio.
Okay.
There's no children near.
Robert Kelly in Korea was a sensation when he was on the Skyping with the BBC and his kids came sashaying into the room, and it was quite a thing. David Kang, what are you watching for most particularly from Rex Tillerson's first big trip to Asia?
Well, again, I think everyone's focused on the North Korean nuclear weapons and the China angle. And he has a hard trip because it's not clear what North Korea policy is. They're still undergoing a review. It's not clear what China policy is.
You mean U.S. policy towards
U.S. policy mm-hmm. towards North Korea, U.S. policy towards China.
Mm-hmm.
So he's heading over a little early before, you know, all administrations do a policy review.
Mm-hmm.
All options are on the table. But it's not clear what he's actually going to try and push forward, either for North Korean nukes or how he's going to deal with China. I mean, are we going to use force? Are we not? And so I think in some ways he's going to try and raise those issues, but I think it'll be more preparatory than trying to lay down a line that the U.S. is a foreign policy strategy.
There's been so much talk about how the State Department has been backseated here. Donald Trump sort of gave it the back of his hand from the very first days that he came into office, barely paid attention to it. Lots of places unfilled there and reports of unhappiness within the State Department. I mean, maybe we don't have a policy. Who's making policy these days on Asia?
Well, again, many posts are still unfilled. We have ambassadorial posts that are empty. We have State Department posts that are empty. So again, it ultimately comes back to the president. And one thing I would say is, and I would point out that the concern over the number of reporters or the policy, that's American focus.
Yeah.
In Asia, they are all deeply concerned about dealing with a president that's relatively unknown. And so anyone who has his ear, and that's Tillerson, will be important to all the leaders in Asia. So they're going to pay a lot of attention to what he says.
We're going to dig in, but do you see any new dynamic in how the U.S. may confront North Korea on nukes? I mean, North Korea is changing the dynamic. They've done so many tests and missile tests in the last year. But is there any new leverage for the U.S. here?
No. And that's one of the things that I find depressing. We're having the same debates about what to do with North Korea that we've been having since I was in graduate school 20 years ago.
I mean, Abe, we just heard him saying it's a new kind of threat on tape, and people are talking about these missiles capable of carrying nukes at some point being able to reach where there are U.S. troops, even U.S. soil.
That's true, and yet they've already been able to hit South Korea and Japan, so it's not like they're going to launch the minute they have these weapons. The question is still, do we hit them with a stick or give them a carrot?
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's trip to Asia, Japan, South Korea, China, and what is on the line. David Ignatius is with us, foreign affairs columnist for The Washington Post. David Kang is with us, director of the University of Southern California Korean Studies Institute from Los Angeles. We'll go to Shanghai and China in a minute as well, and Rob Schmitz of NPR. You can join us this hour. Are you watching Asia these days? North Korea's nukes and missiles, China's muscle. Do you have a sense of what Rex Tillerson wants, who he is, what's on his mind? And President Obama tried to pivot to Asia. What do you think America First Donald Trump will do? Nukes on people's minds, 2017 New Year's address. Here's the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, hinting his country could launch new long-range missiles sometime this year.
Intercontinental ballistic missile test launch preparation is in its last stage.
Here's South Korea's acting president. They've got turmoil there, responding to that threat, saying the threat from North Korea is real and imminent.
I strongly condemn that North Korea disregarded our and the international community's consistent warning and fired ballistic missiles again, and it is a direct challenge to the globe and serious provocation.
That sounds like hot war, like nuke war. Let's hope it never, ever, ever, ever happens. There's trade war out there as a possibility as well. Middle of this, just a couple of days ago in Beijing, you had the Chinese Premier Li Ka-shing saying his country had no interest in engaging in a trade war with the United States. But if they did, listen. There's a Chinese leader saying, should a trade war break out between China and the United States, it would be the foreign invested countries, in particular U.S. firms, that would bear the brunt of it. We don't want to see any trade war breaking out between the two countries. That wouldn't make our trade fairer. But a warning, a threat right in the middle of that. Can we step back for a second here? David Kang, is the U.S. still seen as a big player in Asia? Obama tried to pivot there. The TPP would have put the United States right at the center of a huge trading bloc, but we're out of that now. Is the United States seen as receding, as relevant, as how's it seen?
Well, I think all countries want more American attention. I mean, even North Korea wants American attention. More, almost all country wants more consistent American attention. And so in some ways, what's caused so much uncertainty is what is going to happen under Trump, because is he going to pull back and start trade wars? That being said, all countries in the region are moving forward with their own economic relations, whether or not the U.S. is involved. And in that sense, not being involved in TPP doesn't mean these countries aren't going to trade. They're just going to start increasing trading with each other.
David Ignatius, Donald Trump has made so much of trade on every front. China is right up at the top of the list of trading partners, and with a huge surplus for many years now with the United States. Is a trade war threat still out there? On the campaign trail, he talked about slapping huge tariffs on Chinese products.
Well, the threat is certainly still out there, and I think there's the hope that China will see it in its interest to offer enough concessions that Trump can claim a win and that trading relations can go on pretty much as they were. The danger for the U.S. is that in a world of such interconnected supply chains, capital markets, it's very hard to establish limits on trade, barriers to trade, without shooting yourself in your foot. American manufacturers want to pay attention to Trump's insistence that we put America first, hire American workers, but they have they're assembling products that are initially manufactured all over the world. That's the way the world economy works today. You can't really put the world economy in reverse. And so I think the Trump administration is really going to have to carefully figure out just what is it that we could achieve that would be in our interest, that wouldn't send markets down, wouldn't end up having job losses as opposed to more jobs.
In his confirmation hearings, Tillerson was saying, look, the U.S. has kind of lost its big role in the world, and that we have the aces and we can bring it back. People want the U.S. back in a leadership position. Here he was then, before the Senate confirmation hearing.
There's no use in whining about it. There's no use in complaining or pointing fingers at anyone. We're just going to play that hand out, because what I know is America still holds all the aces. We just need to draw them out of that deck. And that leaders around the world want our engagement. I said, you're going to be pushing on an open door because people want America to come back.
Texan Rex Tillerson there. David Kong, does America hold all the aces in Asia?
I think the United States holds a lot of aces. As I said, everyone wants American trade and attention. I'm not quite so sure that the leadership is the component that is looked for by everyone, but certainly there's a lot of attention for the United States. And that's one of the questions about the Trump administration is, what will their policy actually be towards China? And are they going to try and have this kind of negotiating transactional relationship over everything? And can it be successful or not?
Okay, let's dig in on Korea and South Korea first. Just at the end of last week, we saw the leader there formally out after huge protests and over a very sort of funky relationship and allegations of bribes. Park Geun-hye out. The Constitutional Court ruled on Friday to end that presidency. They'll have a new elections coming on May 9th. Is this turmoil, David Kong? Could we see a change in political stripes in South Korea? What would it mean for the U.S.?
Almost for sure. The political pendulum's been swinging back to the left or to the progressive side. And that was happening even last year when the National Assembly, to my surprise, went to the left. Now they have a majority. So the impeachment speeds this up and it throws the conservatives into turmoil and only increases the odds that a leftist or a progressive is going to win.
What does that mean for the U.S., for North Korea policy?
Exactly, which means actually a couple of things. Number one, probably more less willingness to confront North Korea and probably more willingness to try, again, more engagement, reopening of economic ties, excuse me, family reunions and things like that. It also means at least putting on the table better relations with China. All Korean presidents want good relations with both China and the United States. And even the conservatives like Park Geun-hye had very good relations with China. Mm-hmm. Thad has put that into a bit of a mix.
The missile defense.
Yes, and it's been mostly symbolic at this point. Talk of stopping K-pop stars from going to China. Mm-hmm. So a leftist Korean president could potentially put that into question, and that would mean a huge impact on the United States, because it would all be interpreted as Korea shifting again towards China away from the United States.
Is there something that Rex Tillerson can ask China to do with North Korea that would put the brakes on what seems like, whether it's George W. Bush or Barack Obama or Bill Clinton before that, seems like a relentless, up and down, but relentless overall progress toward more nuclear weapons capacity?
Yeah, and that's what I think one of the biggest mistakes, I think, of American successive American administrations, because it's consistent, is we have to get China to do more in North Korea. And I'm not sure what China can do. First of all, I don't think they have any interest in any kind of regime change on North Korea any more than we have in starting a war. To knock over that regime is to open up a whole host of problems. So there are upper limits on pressure. And even China has upper limits on pressure. So they can do things. And the Chinese are clearly taking an engagement stance, even though they don't like North Korea. And so I'm not sure what else China can actually do that would satisfy us.
David Ignatius, how long can the United States wait while this nuclear weapons progress proceeds in North Korea? We have allies that were promised to protect right there, South Korea and Japan. We have our own military bases there. Ultimately, we have American soil to think about here and a pretty erratic leadership in North Korea. Can the U.S. just sit and take it?
I think it would be difficult for any president, and especially this one, to accept as a fait accompli a Chinese ICBM that could strike U.S. territory.
Chinese, you mean North Korean?
Excuse me, North Korean ICBM that could strike U.S. territory carrying a nuclear weapon. President Trump said that's not going to happen, sort of quasi-red line.
Easy to say, but they've got bazillion artillery shells aimed right at Seoul, South Korea, and hard to stop. I mean, no one's been able to figure out
So to come back to the question of what can be done about it, I think the U.S. can do more on the diplomatic front than it's done. And interestingly, Donald Trump, in addition to saying he wanted to meet with Vladimir Putin of Russia, also said he'd be willing to meet with Kim Jong-un, the erratic mercurial dictator of North Korea.
Well, that would be a meeting.
And that's quite a meeting to imagine.
Yeah.
But they could sell seats for it.
Yes.
But that at least suggests that this administration might be open to some renewal of diplomacy. So that there's more. U.S. could move toward diplomacy. China can do more in terms of pressure. It already has done more this year in announcing that it will import no more coal from North Korea. Something it had been reluctant to do before. That's a key source of foreign exchange and revenue for the North Korean regime.
Of course, they're coming back on their own coal production too in China, I guess. So as they
So they're going to reduce those imports. That will hurt North Korea. It's clear also that the Chinese were genuinely upset that the half brother of Kim Jong Un, Kim Jong Nam, who in effect had been under Chinese protection in Macau, that he was, it appears, assassinated in Malaysia. That was
airport.
A slap directly in the face of China. They didn't like it. And so I think there's room for them to be more aggressive, room for the U.S. to be a little bit more diplomatic, if you will. And it would seem to me between those two poles is wise policy.
A couple of calls, and we'll go to Shanghai. Jim in Omaha, Nebraska. Jim, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. In view of South Korea's current political upheaval and them having an interim president, would now be even a productive time to go there?
David Kang?
In some ways, it's more about what the U.S. is trying to say to the whole region. So, yeah, I mean, it's very hard to have any kind of concrete discussion when they don't have a real president and we don't have a real policy. But any kind of U.S. presence to talk about with the Trump administration to do, I think, is a good thing.
Alan in Frederick, Maryland. Alan, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. One of your guests mentioned that this issue with North Korea has been discussed for the same way for the last 20 years since he was in graduate school.
Yep.
And I think that part of the problem is that too many of our elected officials don't understand anything at all about science. They think that American exceptionalism means that other countries will never be able to use basic physics principles to develop nuclear weapons. I think we're replaying the same scenario that occurred after the Second World War with regard to Russia and the development of their nuclear weapons.
Alan, it's an interesting angle, and one can imagine not everybody is all plugged into science. On the other hand, the reports are repeated and vivid of the nuclear weapons progress in North Korea, and everybody has talked about the tests going on there. Let us hold that for a second. I want to jump to Shanghai. Rob Schmitz joins us. He's Shanghai correspondent for NPR News. Rob, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Lots on the plate here with Rex Tillerson and China, but let's just stick with North Korea for a second. We have a kind of a range of views here on whether there's something that China might do that would rein them in on the nuke development program. What do you see from Shanghai?
Well, I think that when we look at this, we need to consider here that China is North Korea's most important ally. It's its biggest trading partner. It's its main source of food, of arms, of energy. So, you know, China's helped sustain Kim Jong-un's regime, and it's always opposed harsh international sanctions on North Korea because it doesn't want the regime to collapse. It doesn't want refugees to pour over the border. So I think, yes, I think there's probably something more that can be done on that front just because of the dependency that North Korea has on China. And I'm sure that Secretary Tillerson will be discussing potential options in his trip to Beijing this weekend.
How's this visit being anticipated in China, Rob?
Well, I think, you know, like many of us, the Chinese don't know much about Tillerson. Chinese leaders are trying to figure out who he is, and more importantly, to what degree does he speak for the president of the United States? It's not clear yet what kind of Secretary of State he'll be, how strong his role will be in the administration. China saw Hillary Clinton as a very strong Secretary of State, maybe a little too strong, and that's part of the reason many in Chinese leadership was worried about a Clinton presidency. The Chinese saw John Kerry a little differently. So I think China's leadership is going to want to figure out who they're talking to what degree he'll be negotiating on behalf of the president, who, as it turns out, the Chinese are also trying to figure out through all of his late-night tweets.
Yeah, when they saw Clinton as too strong, what did that mean to them? What did they fear if she would have become president?
Well, they were a little worried about, they were under the impression that Clinton was going to be a hawkish president, that she would take action against them in the South China Sea. I think, and this is obviously pre-election, I don't really think that they had a really concrete prediction of what Trump would be like as president. But I think that they thought that anything would be better than Clinton at that stage. And after Trump won and started making comments about the one China policy, had a phone conversation with Taiwan's president, mm-hmm. Tsai Ing-wen. Then I think the ball dropped and they started to realize, this doesn't look so good.
Now, Xi Jinping, the Chinese leader, is slated in early April to visit President Trump at Mar-a-Lago, his private club in Florida that he calls the Southern White House, I guess. Presumably Rex Tillerson is setting some kind of at least tone for that meeting. What does Xi Jinping come to that meeting wanting to achieve?
Well, I think it's this. It's probably, you know, a very similar mission to try and figure out who President Trump is, what his priorities are, to see if a lot of the rhetoric that Trump spouted off in his campaign trail, especially on trade, is serious, or whether that was sort of a bluff, and to see what kind of negotiator he is. I think it's to get a feel for who this president is, especially after, you know, we've got, you know, 8 years of Obama. So I think this is going to be just an introductory meeting to try and kind of feel each other out a little to see who is he?
Does China feel like it's the big boss now in Asia with TPP off the table and Trump talking America first?
Oh, yeah. China knows it's the big boss. China's an enormous economic giant in Asia. I think that, I mean, look at this coming weekend. We've got Tillerson in Beijing, but we've also got, I think, just as important in some ways, the ministers of all the TPP countries meeting in Chile. And China is going to be joining them, looking at to see if it can kind of move in on all of the work that the United States has done to try and construct this trade partnership. And so, you know, China's also got other trade relations with so many countries in this region. So I think it does want to step in and start to write its own rules.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hi, it's Tom. Thanks for listening to this On Point podcast. I want you to take a moment to think about the people you care about. Have they ever listened to a podcast? All this month, we're asking our listeners to tell a friend about a podcast they love. This one? Another one? Do it in real life or on social media, and if they don't know how to download them, give them a quick lesson. You'll be opening up a new world for them. Tell us what you're recommending with the hashtag TryPod. That's hashtag TryPod, and thanks. I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's trip to Asia, Japan, South Korea, China, North Korea, and its nukes looming over all of it, and what is on the line on this visit. Rob Schmitz is with us, NPR correspondent in Shanghai. David Ignatius is here, foreign affairs columnist for The Washington Post. David Kang is with us. He's at the Korean Studies Institute at USC in Los Angeles. What do you see evolving in the American role in Asia? We've got all kinds of people writing into us here. Michael says, who's running the show? Tillerson appears to be clueless and won't take any questions. Who's running the show is an interesting question there. Here's another listener says, we are witnessing the beginning of the Chinese century and the disillusion of American empire. Can Trump / Tillerson manage it as well as the Brits did post-World War II? Doubtful, this listener says. But David Kang, how about that? Is that how you think it looks from Asia?
I don't think it's quite that extreme yet. I don't think everyone's sort of beginning to kowtow to China. But certainly, I think what is becoming increasingly clear is that China has essentially already risen. All this talk about China's rise, the only question is how much bigger it's going to get than all the other countries in Asia. And so we do have to live with China. It's not going away. It's not like a problem that can be solved. The U.S. will have to live with China one way or another. And that, I think, is the fundamental question that American policymakers are going to have to grapple with. They're not just going to capitulate. What are we willing to give? What do we want to get from China?
Markel in Springfield, Massachusetts. Markel, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
A few weeks ago, Henry Kissinger said on the BBC World Service that 50 years ago, the United States and Asia was an essential ingredient in politics and the economy. Fast forward now, the United States is an insignificant player in the world economy. And last, Worth Magazine some years ago said the 21st century is going to belong to two countries, China and Brazil. Can you comment on those two issues?
I mean, it's hard to see. I appreciate your call, Markel. It's hard to see the United States as an insignificant player in any terms at this point, with its globe-straddling military and still very, even economic, very large. But David, I don't know exactly what Kissinger says there. Of course, 50 years ago, it wasn't so long after total victory in World War II. So, of course, it was a very significant player then. What about the evolution we've seen since?
If you're speaking to David Ignatius, what's troubling is to see the self-inflicted wounds for the U.S. that are reducing our influence in Asia beyond the natural process of China getting bigger and more powerful and the United States, relatively speaking, getting weaker. The evisceration of the TPP, a pretty good trade agreement compared to others, was just, a classic example of just a mistaken policy. It wasn't – since Hillary Clinton was also supporting getting out of TPP, there wasn't a counterargument. But it was a move that really is going to hurt the U.S. over time economically and strategically. The U.S. is still so powerful. Its ability to project military power across Asia is enormous. One of the smart things that the Obama administration did was to understand that seeing Asia not simply in bilateral terms with China, either confrontation or cooperation, but seeing Asia as a sort of series of envelopes of U.S. Alliances and power, the crucial U.S. alliance with Japan, helping Japan to be stronger and more of a player, the crucial U.S. alliance, obviously, with South Korea, helping South Korea defend itself against the North. Once upon a time, an improving relationship with the Philippines, not so much now. No. And finally, Australia, a reliable, long-term friend that sadly President Trump early on in the White House seemed to alienate. So getting back to that idea of a whole range of U.S. friends and partners who together will shape this Asian future, I think that's good sense.
Good sense if we pull it off. I mean, people are wondering, though, about real change. David Kong, we heard tape of Japan's Prime Minister Abe saying earlier that there's now a new kind of threat from North Korea with its nuclear weapons. A listener asks, what does Northeast Asia look like 5 years from now, assuming that North Korea does not return to compliance with the Non-Proliferation Treaty? Are we reaching a point, David, where the policies and military policies of South Korea, Japan, and China, for that matter, begin to make significant material changes in response to North Korea's armaments?
Well, this is why I say we're basically having the same debates, and that nobody really has a lot of tools. Sure, China could pull the plug out from North Korea, just like we could attack them. But neither one of us is going to do it because the costs are way, way too high in the region.
So what does that mean, though, in terms of Japan's military, its nuclear counter-readiness, if there's such a thing? Does it mean Japan arms up even more if you've got nukes piling up in North Korea?
Yeah, I mean, that's some of the possibility. I will point out that although Japan is talking that way, their defense budget is essentially flat over the last 20 years. Mm. So they can go up a lot, but so far they haven't chosen to make almost any material response. A lot of this is focused more on, again, American pressure and diplomacy, Chinese pressure and diplomacy, and actually interacting some way with North Korea. Because, again, this is clearly a problem that's not going to just simply go away if we just ignore it.
Rob Schmitz, how's China looking at Japan? I mean, Japan must be weighing this U.S. alliance, how steady it is, how reliable it is. There was Abe right away to talk with President Trump. But even so, Trump's talking in a new way, America first. If you've got nukes in North Korea, you've got a stronger China with historical enmity toward Japan. I mean, we see these headlines about Japan sending its biggest warship on a three-month tour through the South China Sea. This is a very large aircraft carrier, helicopter carrier, the Izumo, into the South China Sea. China not happy about that. How will China respond if Japan arms up in response to China and, for that matter, North Korea? Rob.
Yeah, obviously China is not happy at all about the aircraft carrier from Japan. I think China and Japan have had a very chilly relationship, especially with Abe in power, and I don't see that getting any better. Japan obviously was very quick in meeting with President Trump when he was elected. I think that they were worried about being left out there in the middle of Asia with few friends. China's obviously had also a pretty large territorial dispute with Japan in the East China Sea over some islands that the Japanese call the Senkaku Islands and the Chinese call the Diaoyu Islands. Now, that hasn't flared up for a few years, but that could certainly flare up if Japan starts to become a little more aggressive, which it appears that it might be doing in the future.
Denise in Omaha, Nebraska. Denise, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Yeah, I am concerned about just the language that we're using even in this discussion, and particularly the term quiet man. Mm-hmm. That
for Rex Tillerson.
That seems to be romanticizing this situation when, in fact, it's more secretive, in my view. And I think it's important that subtleties like that can characterize the situation, and since it's so important that our allies and friends and others around the world are interested and listening, that we not romanticize it like a Hollywood thing, the quiet man. Really, so far he's unproven, and it's more secretive at this point.
Denise, I fully take your point. I mean, he is quiet, and it is unsettling to have someone in such a high post who's just not talking, not taking the press along, David Ignatius, quiet and effective or secretive and disturbing?
Well, we don't know enough to answer that. I'll cite an anecdote that I printed a week ago, which I think illustrates what he could be. This was a meeting in the Oval Office involving Tillerson, Trump, Jared Kushner, and Tillerson's hoped-for deputy, Elliot Abrams, who was turned down by the White House. And in this conversation, Trump said, well, why do we need the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which is our anti-bribery statute. It's been around since the late 1970s. Why do we need that? It just takes away millions of jobs, billions of dollars in sales. And Rex Tillerson said, well, Mr. President, I think it actually helps shape a world in which it's easier for us to do business, certainly for me. And then he told an anecdote about somebody trying to get a bribe from ExxonMobil in the Middle East and him walking out of the room and then them inviting the company back 6 months later. And Trump breaks in and says, well, that's just because you're Exxon. No, said Tillerson. It's because people want to do business with the United States. And I think that kind of experienced voice is like what Jim Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, has been, where he can say to Trump, look, torture isn't the best way to get information. I'm a four-star general. I know what I'm talking about. And Trump ends up backing down. He needs voices like this who have experience, who can tell him when he's got a bad idea. Can Tillerson be such a voice? Can he shape policy? Can he quietly convince the president not to do things that is a very inexperienced president that he impulsively thinks he wants? That's the question. That's the role he could play. I have no idea at this point whether he'll be able to, whether he has the strength, the understanding of how to operate as a diplomat to play that role.
There's a hope, but then there's Steve Bannon and his ideological view of the world, and Trump himself with his interest all over the place. I want to look at that as well. We're looking at Rex Tillerson's big trip to Asia. Rob Schmitz in Shanghai, if I may, I want to ask you about big headlines in the last couple of days about this enormous real estate deal in New York with the family of President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Anbang, the Anbang group there, very politically connected, politically elite connected, huge investment firm in China, putting $400 million or more into a big property on Fifth Avenue with a huge stake in it of the Kushner family. What about this? It you know, many people are saying this looks like maybe just a blatant, huge buying of influence with the president's inner circle. What is Anbang, and how do you see what's unfolding here, Rob?
Well, before I tell you about Anbang, I think we should note here that Anbang has come out today and said that it denies the Bloomberg report saying that it has a $400 million investment in the Kushner family building.
And it's not even negotiating it? It's not. I mean, the report is it's negotiating.
It denies being involved.
Okay.
So I think it was an interesting, very quick denial. It led me to believe what Bloomberg was looking at. But at the same time, you know, it's hard to know. This is all obviously all very murky. This is based on documents that Bloomberg was able to obtain, showing that they were a part of this deal. But Anbang, regardless, let me tell you a little bit Anbang, because it is a very big player and will be increasingly, in the United States if the U.S. lets it. Anbang Insurance is an extremely large company with a murky background. Many suspect that it has ties to the leadership in China, either to family of leadership or the leadership in China. We don't know that for sure, but the United States takes extra security precautions with Anbang. Anbang owns the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in Manhattan, among many other assets and properties in the United States and abroad. It tried to buy the Starwood Hotel chain. It didn't work out for Anbang, and now you've got this interesting story that may or may not be true about an offer on Kushner's Manhattan property, which was doing very poorly and sounds like it would have been a pretty sweetheart deal. But we're not sure whether Anbang is involved, and Anbang has denied any involvement in this at this stage.
Fascinating. What about the Chinese government and the reports lately that 100-plus trademarks approved for Donald Trump in China? Is there currying of favor there for the businessman president?
Yes. Those trademarks, about a few dozen of them, I think, were approved in February all at once. And that was highly, highly unusual for the Chinese to do that in a spate like
that's
that.
That's very valuable stuff.
Yeah. Well, a lot of these are for, you know, you name it. You've got all sorts of different companies and different ideas for companies, including massage parlors and you name it. But that said, I think this is something that should be explained too, that in China, when a new U.S. president is elected, suddenly you'll have an incredible amount of activity with trademarks. You know, when Obama was elected, suddenly you had Obama nightclub in Shanghai. And
yeah, but
like
Obama
that.
Didn't own those trademarks.
No, he didn't. And so this originates from Trump's original trademark requests before the election, well before the election. And after he was elected, they suddenly were approved. So yes, that is extremely unusual, and I'm sure it most definitely has to do with the fact that he is president of the United States.
Kind of incredible. Mind-blowing in a way. David Kong, what do you see at stake here if the U.S., if this administration does well or poorly in handling U.S. relations with this very important chunk of Asia? What's on the line, David?
Well, this is where it's hard to be too over the top because, of course, China and the U.S. are the two biggest economies in the world. The Asia-Pacific in general is the most economically dynamic place, region in the world. So getting U.S. policy right towards this region has consequential effects for the U.S. and for the region itself. But one thing I'd point out is that Asian countries share some, but they don't have all American interests. And there's going to be differences even with our allies. None of those countries are moving away from each other. They're stuck. So they have to live with each other. And they're not going to, none of those countries want to choose sides. So an American policy that forces them to try and choose between China and the U.S., I think, is a mistake.
Do you see a new strategy emerging from the Bannon, Tillerson, Trump triad, David Ignatius?
I think they initially hoped to have a new strategy. They hoped to destabilize China by introducing new factors. I think they're coming back more toward the center point of the relationship. And that's in the U.S. interest. I think a strong China is hard to deconstruct, to use the word that Steve Bannon likes.
Mm. It'll be eyes wide open, as far as we can see anyway. Rex Tillerson traveling with very, very little press on his big tour of Asia. We'll be watching as best we can. I want to thank all three of you. David Ignatius with The Washington Post, thank you very much for being with
us. Thanks,
Tom.
Time.
Rob Schmitz with NPR in Shanghai. Rob, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
And David Kong at the USC Korean Studies Institute in Los Angeles. Thank you very much, David.
Thanks.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.